Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Polvencia. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church. Welcome to the Idea Talks podcast. On today's episode, we're celebrating our 200th episode.
Bum, bum, bum.
That's a lot of talking and listening.
Yeah.
Over the years.
I know. If you're new.
This is posting on 7-Eleven.
Right. I mean, we need to get a Slurpee, baby.
We need to get a Slurpee.
Yeah. Well, okay.
I mean, let's do it.
We're going to do it because
Hey, tell you what, everybody out there, Slurpee's on us if you visit a 7-Eleven.
Slurpee's on us. Go to 7-Eleven and get a free Slurpee. Just know that we paid
it's for on it. Us. Yes, we partnered with 7-Eleven.
Just tell them we're with the Idea Network.
Yeah. Hey, I'm getting my free Slurpee for the 200th episode of Idea Talks. Yeah, just go over there and whatever you want, cherry or grape. It's fine. Just go.
200, man.
It's a lot.
So if you're just new and this is your first episode, before you listen to this, you really got to get caught up.
I agree. So if you're in your phone, scroll backwards like 90 times and get back to the first episode, which I was not on.
Start there
and then go from there.
We'll see you here in a couple days.
We'll wait. Don't worry. We'll still be here.
We'll be here.
Yeah. But on today's 200th episode, we thought we'd celebrate in our traditional, most popular fashion. That's by doing an AMA. Ask me anything with Josh and Drew.
I'm not sure. We've done a lot of these. What number is this?
I have literally no clue. We have at least 10, probably. Yeah.
But it's an AMA, which means people can ask us anything.
We always come up with those random titles for these two. It's like fighting deacons that are drunk.
Yeah.
Or something. Drunk deacons or something like that. It's great.
So we'll figure out one for this too.
Yeah.
But you scrolled on it. It is an AMA, and you actually those that are listening know the title before we know the title. Yeah.
Thanks for valuing our opinion enough to click on an AMA from us. Yeah. You know, you could be spending your day otherwise, but here you are.
And now multiple people just turned off their podcast. They're like, that's a good point, Drew. I don't know why I'm listening to this.
Hey, first question comes from a gentleman named Nathan on our Idea Network community.
Yeah.
He asked, what's your usual weekly schedule of ministry at Southern Hills Baptist Church of Las Vegas? When do you do sermon prep, visiting, et cetera? And how do you organize that schedule?
Okay. So I would just brief this. I think we've touched on this in the past. My schedule is relatively simple. I like to time block. So my Mondays are sermon prep. I wake up, I do sermon prep pretty much all day. On Tuesdays, that's my Idea Network day. I coach pastors in the morning. I spend time with ministry leaders throughout the day. I do our virtual roundtable. I do meetings when it comes to Idea Network. That's my Idea Network day. Wednesday are my direct report days primarily, which means I'm going to have a executive team meeting or what I would call an associate pastor's meeting where I have three associate pastors. I bring them into a room. We have a conversation. I also go to my early morning small group on Wednesday mornings, but then my executive or my associate pastor's meeting. And then I have my one-on-one direct report meetings with Fred, Jason, and Caleb. Then I have my sermon meeting on that day as well, where I will preach my sermon that I've prepared to my creative team. They'll give some ideas and that'll finalize my sermon. I'm summarizing here. My Thursday meetings are my staff days. So my direct reports on Wednesday, but my Thursdays are primarily staff. So I've got lots of staff meetings, different types of meetings. I do a lot of one-on-one conversations with my staff. I try to make myself generally available to spend time with my staff and our interns, the young adults that serve on our team. And then Fridays generally are my church people days. So I just spend all day Friday with members of the church. And really from sun up to sundown, I spend those Fridays with those meetings take different shapes, but primarily I spend all day on Friday with church members. And then Saturday is my family day and my slash Sabbath, where I will rest and hang out with the girls and go see a movie, go for a hike. And then Sunday, of course, is a full ministry day. So that's my day. That's my week.
Now, what's your longest day?
Ooh, good question. Well, by the time this airs, my longest day will be Tuesdays, because Tuesdays will now include my, we're bringing back the midweek service since we shut it down during COVID. And midweek is always the longest day. And then in 2024, it'll change to Wednesdays. That's when we'll put our midweek. And so that day will go from 7 a.m. till 9 p.m. straight. So those are the long days.
Now, most of those meetings are already crafted by your secretary, or how does that work?
Yeah, good question. So I have an executive assistant, and it's, by the way, we often say, you've probably heard us say it before, it's the best first hire is a good executive assistant. Before the youth pastor, get yourself a good executive assistant. And then build the staff from there. But my executive assistant helps establish a lot of those meetings. One of the best things an executive assistant can do is confirm those meetings. If you have a lot of people not showing up to your meetings, it's because there's not been confirmations and clear scheduling. But yeah, most of those meetings are established ahead of time, and they are confirmed ahead of time. And yes, by my executive assistant.
Now, are you a huge productivity fiend when it comes to apps and stuff that you keep track of all this in, or how does this work? You use Google Calendar or things or Airtable or
no?
Okay.
Drew knows this, and he said he's nice to assume that on here, but I am not a big tech guy, meaning I'm looking at my calendar, and it is an Excel spreadsheet that I update once a quarter, and it's really old school. But I did transition in 2022 to Google Cal, which was really hard to pull me away from Apple Cal, but my entire team, the entire ministry is on there now.
Right.
And so that actually has been helpful, because we do Microsoft Teams, which is like Zoom, and a lot of stuff flows through there. So that's been helpful.
Now, I knew the answer to the question before I asked it. And the reason I asked it wasn't not to shame you in your technology, but rather to tell our listeners, it's not about the tool.
Mm.
It's about how you use it. I always say my father-in-law gets more done on a 3x5 card than I could ever get done in a day. And whatever it is, for Josh, it's, Excel spreadsheets, and that's worked really great for him and as productive as he is because he's using it. And I think there are lots of great things out there. You could use a lot of things. We could always get better at being more efficient and stuff. However, it's not as much about the tools, about how you use it. So
great point. Love it. Good point.
All right. Next up, thoughts on raising kids in a pastor's home, especially at younger ages, things you did well or experienced growing up, or anything you go back and do differently?
Wow. Yeah, that's a great question. If you're going to talk about especially younger children, which is what's brought up here by Joshua. Thank you, Joshua. Great question. Heather and I just recorded an episode of the podcast not too long ago. We're going to find out what episode it is, but it's called Grit and Grace. And we're talking about the fact that both are necessary in early childhood development. If you have younger children, I think some of us came from a background where there was so much grit, there wasn't a lot of grace presented. And we think that it's important to demonstrate the grace of God in our children's life. But the pendulum begins to swing so far over where it's all grace and there's no grit, there's no tough love, there's no laying down of the law. And in reality, if the parent doesn't lay down the law, what we notice is somebody in the home is going to lay down the law, and it'll be the child. And a three-year-old does not have a good perspective on how the law ought to be laid down. And so we would say one of the things is to lay down the law and then to show grace. But you cannot show grace if you haven't already laid down the law. Other aspects of things we've done well, Drew, when it comes to early childhood development, you're closer to that than I am. And genuinely, if you don't know Drew's family or kids, they are a delight. My children, for example, are teenagers. And they will say, they said it at dinner last night, we only babysit for certain families. And yours would be one of them. Why? Well, because certain kids are just a terror. Your children are, to use another word we used in another episode, lovely. What would you say about children and young childhood development?
Sure. I think a couple things come to mind is... we had the luxury of letting my wife stay at home and raise them. And I think having a great partner to do that is obviously not a secret sauce. It's not very secret at all. But on top of that, I think the most practical thing I heard from a parenting perspective, at least that's hit me, is in this stage, like I have my oldest is 10, my youngest is 3. And the best thing I can possibly do in any given day with them is that they'll literally physically get on the floor on their level and have floor time with them. And that signifies to them, A, I'm approachable, I'm there for them, it's our time to interact, whether that's fight and wrestle, have a dance party, whatever. Because later on in life, when I get to your stage, it's FaceTime. So I'm not physically on the floor with them anymore, I'm doing face-to-face time with them. And I think being able to pour into them, if you come to my house right now, my children will immediately, I'll walk in the door and my two boys will ask me, hey dad, can you beat us up? And that's not an abusive thing. What that means to them is, hey, can you throw us on the love sack? Can you wrestle with us? Can you play with us? That's what that means to them. And they'll constantly ask me that throughout the day until they go to bed, because that's the most beneficial activity I can do with them at this stage in child development. So
I mean, it sounds like the point is if you give them floor time, they'll give you FaceTime. And I can absolutely attest to that. I am not a floor time guy. I am not a wrestle with me guy. I am not a let's get on the and let's wrestle down each other. I discipline myself to say that's what Jonathan needs. Let's do this. And with my girls, let's play dolls. Let's play Barbies. Let's play on the ground. And it is so rewarding when they're 12 years old to 18 and they want to talk to you. So I would say those are some ideas. Obviously, we could talk for over an hour, but hopefully that answers some of Josh's questions. I would say one last thing about being a PK. Here's the thing. When it comes to being a PK, be genuine and authentic when it comes to following Jesus Christ. You can fool a lot of people and still keep a job in ministry, but you will not keep your kids. What they want to know in the long run is, does this man actually worship Jesus Christ? And if you don't, step out of ministry and start pursuing a relationship with Jesus. If you do, then demonstrate that walk with Jesus in front of your children. Let them see that. And then lastly, I would say, you've heard us all say this many times as Tices, my parents taught us to prioritize their children above the ministry. Your children are your number one ministry after your spouse. Spouse, then children, then the church. And they know if they are prioritized. If you're not sure if you prioritize your children, ask them. Go to your children and say, do you believe that I prioritize you above our ministry? And that's a hard thing to ask a 12-year-old. Now, I don't suggest you do that to a 4-year-old, but I think it's important for you to wrestle with this idea. But outside of that, I would say that's our advice. That's the answer to that, Josh.
Next up, what are your thoughts on public education in the absence of affordable private Christian education or the ability to homeschool? So it sounds like maybe we don't have the resources or means to toss our kids into private education, or the maybe skills or knowledge or know-how to homeschool.
Yeah, this question comes in from my friend Walter. Thanks for asking the question, Walter. I would begin by saying that a lot of that answer has to do with the district that you find yourself in. From what I understand, the districts in some states like Florida and Texas may be vastly different than what you're experiencing in parts of Colorado or in parts of New England. So I think the district might have a lot to do with it. Secondly, I would say parental involvement in all three is essential. So I know parents who homeschool, but what they mean by that is they give them a textbook and they walk out of the room. And then their child cheats by looking at the answer key all through high school. How do you know this, Josh? Well, personal accountability, but I won't talk more about that. I was homeschooled all the way through. But I would say be careful. Parental responsibility and parental involvement. Christian school, same thing. You need to be involved and as involved as you possibly can be. But if you are parenting and public school is the only option for you, it's a viable option and it's a good option as long as you're involved at the parental level. PTAs are now part of your schedule. Go to the PTA. Find out what's being read, what's being written, what the teachers are like, who your teachers are, and be involved as much as you possibly can. Make it part of your ministry schedule, and you're going to find that God has brought you perhaps some incredible teachers and incredible friends. But then don't be nervous or intimidated to change teachers if you're not comfortable with that teacher, or to change your children's friends. You might have to change your children's friends inside of the Christian school. You might have to change your children's friends inside of your own church. Well, you're the parent. Make that decision and get involved within this in the public school system. What would you say to that, Drew?
Yeah, it's such a good point because I don't know. I've talked to a few teachers in my past couple of months, and I don't think I've ever met a public school teacher recently who says they're not stressed out of their minds. I've never met a public school teacher that says I've had too many volunteers. So if you think about the ability to have a parent that's willing and able to step in and volunteer in any capacity, which you're doing that very on purpose because you're concerned about what your kids are going to be influenced by or the curriculum or their friends and that kind of thing. But they think they're just, it's an extra hands, helping hand, right? And so you're going to get a lot of good graces from hopefully your kids' teachers that will help you view how they're going to teach your children. So that's what I would say. I have friends that have their kids in public school. They like it more than even private school because of, some of the sporting opportunities or future career development that come out of high school. But they are very actively in their volunteering capacities, and they're in the school. If it's not every day, it's almost every other day.
Yeah. I think that's huge advice. Look, the vast majority of the teachers in the United States are not the representatives of libs of TikTok, right? That you're going to see on social media, oh my goodness, every one of these teachers are this way. From my experience, that's just not the case. Just not the case. But you say, well, what if I do randomly get one of those in one of my... Well, then go and meet the teachers and then request other teachers. Get involved at the local level. And like Drew said, boy, if that teacher had a great volunteer, you became the friend of that teacher. Even if they don't have the Christian faith, they're going to be respectful of the fact, what's in my classroom that might be offensive to this Christian pastor or Christian pastor's wife, child in my, and you've now ingratiated yourself within that individual. And maybe you, not your child, you may lead them to Christ. And that might be a beautiful thing if that is the option God has presented you.
All right, next up, if you were called to plant a new church tomorrow, what would be your first five steps of planting?
Wow, Ryan, that is a great question. I got to be honest, I did not write out five steps, but I will answer it to the best I possibly can. Step number one, if I was called to plant a new church tomorrow, I would get on my knees and spend time in prayer with my wife and search and seek for peace and validation that this is correct. The second thing I would do is I would talk with my wife to make sure she felt the calling of God on her life as well. Now, I know I just broached into a subject that can be controversial. You may be in a relationship where you believe that your wife is simply called to you and that you are the leader that your wife's perspective might be, I'm called to you and you're called by God. And if that's your relationship, that's awesome. If you both in agreement with that, great. I still think you should talk with your wife. I'm in a relationship where I believe Heather is called of God, and she believes she is called of God, and she believes I'm called of God, and I believe I'm called of God. And so if that's the case, I want to make sure that we both feel that leading and calling into this. So first and foremost, validation and verification from the Lord. Number two, validation, verification from Heather. And then the next step I would take is I would begin to explore my options. Now, that's before I'm checking with my cabinet of mentors and coaches. What are my options? What would that look like if I were to do that? I would begin looking at options like North American Mission Board, SEND, S-E-N-D, SEND Network. And I would begin to find out more about them. Now, I'm connected with them here in Las Vegas. I love their ministry. And I would begin to find out and speak with a local representative in the city that God was calling me to. After I spoke with them and I began to feel a specific call to a specific city and maybe even a specific community, then I would go on to step number four, and I would begin to dialogue with my mentors and coaches. I would begin to bring that out to some friends and ministry leaders and some mentors and coaches in my life and begin to get their thoughts. If I don't receive any strict and drastic warnings, now some might hesitate and say, oh, Josh, I mean, you have this church, and Josh, your kid's over a certain age, and Josh, you're a little too old for that. Those are some general warnings, but if I don't have any specific, clear callings of you should not do this, I would want to hear those voices. Not necessarily that they get a vote, but I would want to give them a view, and I would want to get their voices. And then final step is that's when I would, once I had all those things in order, that's when I would begin to, number five, start mapping out a step-by-step plan between calling to opening day. And that's when I would start setting out that plan. I hope that answers that question. Maybe we'll do a full episode in the future on church planting.
That's good. Closely associated with that question, but more in regards to parenting, it sounds like. The question is, my wife and I just had our first child in December, and we're about a year away from planting. What advice would you give to new parents who are about to plant, and what are some things we should look out for or avoid?
Okay, so you're planting a church. Let me get this straight. You're planting a church, and your first child has just arrived. So you're planting with a baby. Okay, I know exactly what this is like, because when Heather and I first planted, we had our first son just probably 9 months before. The answer to that question has most to do with... ministry is life, and life is ministry. And instead of categorizing family time versus ministry time, you're going to see some of those edges bleed into one another, which means some of your family time is going to be just family time. Some of your ministry time is going to be just ministry time. But a lot of the time, you're going to notice that your ministry and family time bleed into each other. That's not bad. That's not bad. One of the things we loved doing in those early days is pushing Jonathan around in a stroller and putting flyers on doors, going door knocking. We loved that. We were outside. It's beautiful weather in Las Vegas. We put hundreds of flyers on the door. Well, why am I going to leave the house by myself for 4 hours and go out and put a bunch of flyers on the door? Yeah, I could get out 400 in the same time I could get out 300 with my son, but 300 with my son is preferable to 400 flyers without my son. And now I've spent some time with my son. He feels like we went on a walk. He was able to put some flyers on the door itself. He's in a stroller. We were spending family time. I was able to get some good exercise. My wife was able to get some good exercise. So there are lines where it's both. And for church planters, I think that that's really healthy. That's a good place to be. So I would encourage you to, yes, make sure you understand your family is your first and primary ministry, but bring them in and bring them with you on ministry. There's going to be a lot of times, a lot of church planters have a lot of time with family, right? Like, for example, Drew and I are taking our wives to dinner. We're taking our wives to dinner tonight because we're friends. We've developed a deep relationship, and that's just fun. But somebody visits your church for the first time. These are not your friends, but you're going to go over to their home for dinner. That's a ministry. You don't have to go to a coffee shop like Josh does in Las Vegas and talk with these people. You're more likely going to go over to their home with another young couple, and their kids are going to play Legos in the other room. And bringing your family on that becomes ministry, but also family time. We're going to go meet some new friends. And so bringing your family with you as much as you can on ministry has been a huge aspect that I think successful church planters have attempted. Does that mean all of your family time is ministry time? No, there should be some times that has nothing to do with the church people. Sometimes it's separated and sometimes the lines are blurred.
I think this happens in business too, not just in ministry. I know many family businesses that their intent and hope was maybe the child would one day take it over when they're ready to retire. And as a result of that separation or not involvement, by the time the kid gets ready to take it over, they want to have nothing to do with it at all. So I think in parenting, as many times as you can, that small example you gave with Jonathan is a great example. You could have passed out 400 flyers, because that's what you were capable of doing. But instead of passing out 400 flyers, you risk the 100 to bring Jonathan along with you. And it's our job as parents to look in and find opportunities to involve them in our life. And hopefully one day they'll involve us in theirs. So lastly, What book or tool do you wish you had in your first full year of full-time ministry?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, first and foremost, I would probably say The Quest for Friendship is the best book you could
Quest for Friendship. Outside of the Bible.
Outside of the Bible. So first of all, the Bible, and then the Quest for Friendship.
Get on Amazon now?
Yeah, after that, I would probably say, look, I'm a classics guy, and some of you are going to laugh when I say this, but one of the greatest ministry tool books in the 20th century was The Art of War. No. One of the
Moby Dick.
Moby Dick, correct. One of the great...
Dante's Inferno.
Stop. Would you stop? Okay, that's enough. Christmas Carol.
Okay. Oh, you're being serious?
No.
Okay. I know Josh likes Christmas.
I do love the Christmas Carol. Rick Warren's Purpose Driven Church is a great resource. And there's a reason why it shifted an entire generation of ministry leaders. Now, I understand that some have taken it to an extreme, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You've heard it all before from smarter and better humans than me. Go listen to them if you have a problem with the book. But it helps us understand that a church has five primary purposes, and that a church that focuses on only one of those five purposes, man, is a church that is imbalanced. So the one takeaway from that book, the best takeaway that will really help you categorize and set up and organize your church well, is to say, is my church structured to focus on all five of these categories? And if it is, you will see that his proposition rings true. It becomes a purpose-driven church. If it's been a while since you've read that book and you've already determined that it is a not a good book for whatever reason you have, I would encourage you, go back and peruse it. You'll find that it's extremely biblical and helpful when it comes to that main proposition. So I would say Purpose-Driven Church. You asked for one, I gave you one.
That's episode 200, folks. 200 in the book.
In the book. I got to go get a Slurpee.
You should.
And you should too, guys. Go out and get a Slurpee. And if you do, tell them the Idea Network sent you.
I'm like, what is your... Yes, just tell them.
Tell them.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.